You are now tuned into the Truth Frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up.
Tuning in once again. This is, of course, your daily dose of deprogramming. My name is JD. We are live right now, just like we are every day, Monday through Friday. And this is it, guys. This is the Red Pill Reports for the 30th day of January. No, it's December. It's not January yet. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. I apologize about that, guys. Anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Love the emails that I'm getting from you guys, the people that are finding Red Pill Reports on Facebook. And liking our articles there, and the messages that I'm getting are just awesome, so I cannot thank you guys enough. I just want to say thanks. You know, it's been great. It's been awesome. We are constantly working to build the show and build the website up, so those of you guys who are checking out redpillreports.com on a daily basis, I cannot thank you guys enough for that either. So we've got a really, really big show today, ladies and gentlemen. I'm not going to lie. This is going to be a non-stop till you drop kind of show today. Essentially, we're going to be talking law enforcement again. Now, of course, last week we had on Commander Dale Brown from the Threat Management Center up there in Detroit. He is a private security guard, essentially an armed security guard, but his altruistic nature made that conversation absolutely amazing, and he kind of laid a template for some other options for law enforcement in our country. But today, we're going to have former Sheriff Richard Mack on. Now, Richard Mack is the head of the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association. So we're talking about a different direction, a different idea in terms of what we can do with law enforcement in this country. And I think, you know, I've been doing a lot of research on this, and actually Dale Brown really inspired me to do a lot of research on this. But we're all completely wrong, ladies and gentlemen. You and I have been completely hoodwinked on this whole law enforcement issue. And what I'm talking about is the history of municipal law enforcement. And by municipal, I mean corporate-sponsored, non-elected law enforcement people. The history of that entire organization, municipal law enforcement, has to do with protecting private property for corporations. That's really where that whole movement came from. So when we stand here and we say, you know, all these local law enforcement officers in the city and the county and stuff like that, they're not doing their jobs. They're not supposed to be, you know, oppressing people at the behest of a corporation called the state. Yeah, actually, that's exactly what they're supposed to be doing. And that's exactly what historically they've supposed to be doing this whole time. That's the name of their game. So really, we're presented now with an opportunity to get the actual information. Where has the history of law enforcement come from? Where is this division between sheriffs and law enforcement? You know, why does that division exist? Where does it come from in history? And really, the question that's on the table is, once we can address what it is that law enforcement is doing, we understand their role, we understand their history, then we can ask the question, is this what we want from law enforcement in this country? Because at the end of the day, whether you guys understand it or not, they're still being paid by our tax dollars. They're still being paid by corporations like cities that we pay for. So the question, you know, the validity of the question, is this what we want in law enforcement? That's a valid question. That's a point that all of us need to stop and say, this is important. You know, we need to find out exactly what is going on here. I got to do a quick check here. Okay, everything looks good on my end, ladies and gentlemen. So any of you guys who are hearing a repeat out there, go ahead and refresh your listen live link, because as far as I know on my end, we're going out live. So I hope all of you guys are hearing me loud and clear. Got me off track there. We're talking law enforcement today, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, Sheriff Mack will be here, former Sheriff Mack, head of the CSPOA, will be here at 11 o'clock Central Time, so in the second hour of the broadcast. And we've got a full hour with him today, so we will talk about solutions. I want to talk a little bit about whether or not this division that we see between civilians and the municipal law enforcement, if that division is valid, if it's being potentially spurred on by an agenda coming from above. Lots of questions I've got for Sheriff Mack today. I hope you guys stick tuned to the 11 o'clock and to the 11 o'clock hour when we get a chance to talk with him. I'm going to try a little technological bouncing around today. I'm going to play something for you guys. There was a message to humanity that was broadcast by Anonymous. I'm not sure exactly when the initial date of the broadcast was, but I saw a video yesterday that had this speech in it, and it was moving. I probably watched it like 40 times. Those of you guys who check out the site all the time, you guys already know that if you go to redpillreports.com and get to the show section, not only will you be able to learn about the guests, but you'll also be able to see all the articles from the news that we feel like is pertinent to your lives, or at least pertinent to trying to figure out what the agenda is that's being shoved down our throats. But also in that section, I always try and include a featured video for every single day. And so the video that I have chosen is this message to humanity. But for those of you guys out there who aren't going to get an opportunity to hear it, I'm going to do my very best to play it over the air later on. I've tried it before, crashed and burned. We're going to give it a shot today just because that's the kind of guy I am. You don't, you know, you keep getting up and you keep trying it over and over until you make it work. But I think the message overall is super inspiring and something you guys need to hear. And so I'm going to play that towards the end of the second news segment. So before 11 o'clock, in the last few 5 minutes or so there, I'm going to play that. Giving you guys a heads up, Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton will be on tomorrow. Always a cornucopia of interesting topics and always really on point with current events and things like that. So who knows what we'll be speaking about with them, but I'm sure it will be interesting because they are probably two of the best investigative journalists out there in the world right now, and their website, Truth 3 Media, is one of the most beautiful websites I've seen in a long, long time. So very, very excited to bring them onto the program again for all of you. And then Thursday will be the reschedule of Wolfgang Halbig. He was supposed to be on Friday last week, but I totally dropped the ball on that, as usual. So we didn't get to hear him that day. So anyway, he will be on Thursday. And I have to tell you, I've done a little bit more research into this lawsuit thing. We had a big story about the $1 trillion lawsuit. Turns out that might not be real. And it may not, in fact, be a fake lawsuit, but the terms of the lawsuit might be so extreme that they kind of coincide with an agenda to discredit people who are actually doing quality research about Sandy Hook. So I'm going to obviously be speaking with Wolfgang about that. I'm not sure what his impression of the lawsuit is, or the validity of the lawsuit, or even whether or not the lawsuit exists at this point. So again, tune in Thursday, and we'll try and get to the bottom of all of that mess. And Friday, I've got I've got it on pretty good authority that Mr. Stan Deo is going to be on the program, and I think that will be absolutely amazing. Obviously, Stan Deo is probably one of the most extensive researchers out there. We're talking biblical prophecy. We're talking about ancient texts. We're talking about just all kinds of amazing things. He's also kind of somewhat of a survival expert, as is his wife. So that'll be a fantastic conversation to round out the week. So you guys have plans all week. You know, I'm excited to be filling out your plans for you guys here. So plan on tuning in. We've got a lot of news to cover today, as usual. World's still spinning around. Lots of crazy people still living on it, which means lots of stuff going on in the papers. So let's see here. Probably the big story right now is still the Malaysian airliner that went missing. I have it on good authority now as of this morning that they have found debris and they have found a couple of bodies, and they were able to now say with certainty that plane did crash. They were able to locate the site. They are obviously still looking for the black boxes and things like that. And there's really not a lot of mention of what actually happened. Obviously, there's going to be an investigation going on, but at least we know that the plane has been found. There are some unusual circumstances. Obviously, you know, here at Red Pill Reports, we're not afraid to shy away, or we're not going to shy away from all the conspiratorial types of angles that seem to come out of the woodwork every time a story like this happens. And so this particular one, I knew going in that there would obviously be some backstory and some other things going on. So Paul Joseph Watson actually did a really, really good job, and I want to give him a lot of credit because he's an amazing investigative researcher also. But there's some unusual things, as I said, that are kind of coming out of the details regarding this missing plane. The first one being AirAsia's CEO Tony Fernandez dumping almost 1 million shares in Tune Insurance Holding, BHD, which is the organization that provides travel insurance for AirAsia passengers. And he dumped this nearly 1 million shares, as I said, just days before the flight QZ8501 went missing. On December 26th, the Malaysian Insider reported that Fernandez, who is the founder of the Tune Group SNDBHD, which owns AirAsia, had sold a total of 944,000 shares in Tune Insurance Holdings, BHD, with 850,000 shares being dumped on December 22nd and a nearly another 100,000 being sold the day after. Now, according to its official website, Tune Insurance Holding is an insurance product manager for AirAsia, in which insurance products are sold to AirAsia customers as part of their online booking process. And the share price of AirAsia and Tune Insurance Holdings both fell on the first day of trading after the disappearance of flight QZ8501, with the former shedding nearly 13% at one point, and Tune Insurance nearly down a whole percent. So his decision to dump these shares less than a week before the plane goes missing obviously prompts a little bit of speculation in terms of, did this guy have pre-knowledge about this incident? Obviously, kind of hearkening back to the September 11th, a lot of the extraordinary put options that were put on United and American Airlines before 9/11 in the days leading up to it. So there's obviously a little bit of a connection there. Maybe that's why people are kind of rushing to the conclusion that this guy may have had some foreknowledge. But there's also another little interesting tidbit that one of the blogs out there, one of the news aggregating sites that we all like to go to, or I like to go to quite a bit, is Reddit. Reddit is a fantastic forum for discussing news, and it also is really good at for posting things as they happen. But a couple of weeks ago, a Chinese blogger actually avoided people to avoid AirAsia flights. And this is, again, within 2 weeks of the disappearance of this QZ8501. So very, very unusual circumstances surrounding the disappearance. Obviously, they found it now, and we'll probably get a little bit more information if they can recover the black boxes and get us some information about that. But you know, obviously, jury's still out on this one. We don't know exactly what happened. We know that the pilots were trying to circumnavigate some pretty rough weather at the time, and they asked for a height increase on their trajectory, and it was at that point that everything completely disappeared. One of the details that has come out also is regarding the bodies that they have found. They found a couple of bodies that were known on the passenger manifest, but none of the bodies, or neither of the bodies, had life jackets on, which kind of indicates to the people who are doing the research that it probably wasn't a controlled set down in the water. It was probably something more catastrophic than that. So, again, these people maybe didn't have opportunity to prepare for a water landing. And again, we just don't know. Obviously, there's some other stories that kind of relate to this story. Al-Qaeda has got the new issue of Inspire out. This just came out this week, which is, if those of you don't know, the Inspire is an Al-Qaeda affiliate, and it's a magazine that's online. But this particular issue that just came out features pictures of the undercarriage of commercial airliners' fuselages being blown apart, which is obviously a kind of subliminal suggestion, or not even subliminal, like on the surface type of suggestion, that jihadist extremists start targeting commercial airliners in the Western world. And we also had the story of the Christmas Spectacular. I think that was a Guardian article about maybe 2 weeks ago, talking about Al-Qaeda essentially targeting aircraft over the Christmas holidays and things like that. So is this Airbus deal part of that? Is there a connection here somehow between the new propaganda that has been put out by Al-Qaeda in this Inspire online magazine that they've got, and also linking it to some of the rhetoric that we heard before Christmas with the Christmas Spectacular? Remember, Al-Qaeda was planning on taking, I think, 5 different commercial airliners. So probably a good, well, not a good thing, but it's at least we know this plane isn't in the hands of somebody somewhere getting ready to do something nefarious with it. I guess that's at least a silver lining that we can all look at there. But Al-Qaeda is still now fanning the flames of war, asking for jihadists to carry out attacks on commercial airliners here in the West, so probably including Europe and places like that. So, again, you just have to kind of keep your head on a swivel these days. I don't know if I would necessarily be traveling someplace. That's just me. Maybe I'm a weenie, but, you know, I'm not going to go get in a plane right now and fly across the world. It's just not going to happen. Taliban, back in the news again. They are claiming victory in the Afghanistan war, as NATO has now drawn to a close its combat mission there. And so, NATO obviously had a ceremony just over the weekend, kind of saying, we're done, we're pulling out. Of course, they plan on leaving 13,000 troops there under the guise of NATO, 10,000 of which will be American people, and all the weapons and things like that. And the plan right now is to transfer all those weapons to the people in Afghanistan that they're training, you know, the peacekeeping and the local police, things like that. So we're not really officially out of Afghanistan yet. I don't think we'll be out of Afghanistan forever. $600 billion opium market. Did I say that out loud? I was just thinking it in my mind. I don't think we'll ever leave Afghanistan. $1 trillion of lithium in the ground there. Man, these inner monologues, they just keep spilling out. I apologize, guys. I don't think we'll ever leave Afghanistan is what I'm saying. But the Taliban essentially thinks, well, you guys have left. We pretty much won. And, you know, to be honest, they are completely right. We basically went there, tried to take everything over, and messed up their whole country. And now we're leaving. And that's history of that nation. That's why these nations have so much stuff. It's because of all the stuff that people leave there when they try and invade them. Is the Taliban not in power now? No, of course not. They're going to continue to be fighting against NATO. They're going to continue to be doing everything they're doing there. So according to the Taliban, you know, they won. And it's really difficult. It'd be difficult to argue that point, I think, at this juncture, especially given, you know, the amount of money and time that we spent in Iraq only to lose Iraq in, 2 weeks to ISIS. So, how much money did we spend in Afghanistan? Was it worth it for the lithium and the opium, guys? Was it worth it? All that loss of life? I can't even imagine. Suspected arson in Sweden. There has been another mosque that has been burned in just the same amount of days. It's the second mosque in the same amount of days here. And police are suspecting arson in this particular fire. Now, Sweden, for those of you guys who don't know, they're dealing with a lot of anti-immigration movements in the government there right now. So people are really up in arms. There have actually been referendums to try and limit the amount of foreign nationals brought into the country. I think that happened maybe 3 weeks ago and it failed spectacularly. And so there's a lot of people who are upset about the gentrification of their country and about the foreigners coming in. And that's obviously, unfolding onto the streets as we see mosques are starting to be burnt. This last one, no injuries or anything like that. It happened in the middle of the night. But I think that this is a path that we can see is going to continue for a while there. And we also see similar events happening in France right now, with these places that were essentially, they allowed all these immigrants to come in, and now the people that live there are not down with that. So we're going to see more violence in the street because we, collectively as humanity, we haven't decided how to use our big boy voices and big boy words yet. So we still like to burn things and whatever. There's been another nuclear shutdown in Ukraine. This is kind of a big deal. This is probably, I believe, the fifth largest nuclear plant in the world, if not the fourth largest, certainly the largest in Ukraine. So the Ukraine actually shut down 6 reactors total. And this is the second time in a month that they've had to do this, and they're calling it an apparent electrical malfunction. This is the Zaporizhia nuclear plant, and the website for the plant insisted that radiation levels in the area were normal after the 6th reactor was disconnected from the grid by the generator's internal defense mechanism, which is, again, I worked in the nuclear industry. There's some pretty big flag words that we're seeing here. Now they're saying that the plant is operating at 40% power, and the reasons for the outage are being investigated. They're saying it was a short circuit in the same power stations third reactor that contributed to power cuts across Ukraine earlier in the month. Okay, so they were saying it was a short circuit in the power station's third reactor, which is why they had to shut everything down earlier in the month. But this is, as I mentioned, Europe's largest and the fifth most powerful in the world in terms of nuclear power generation. And what's interesting about this is that the Prime Minister, Yatsenyuk, noted the previous outage. So we're talking about the one that happened earlier in the month. He noted that previous outage during one of his cabinet sessions, urging ministers to tell the truth about the accident, quote-unquote. Now, when a guy like Yatsenyuk is giving a speech in his cabinet sessions and he's talking about a nuclear shutdown and he's using a word like accident, that's pretty telling because accident, after all, was the same word that was used by the social newspapers when Chernobyl went down. And a lot of people may be fuzzy on where Chernobyl is, also in the Ukraine. So this is not a situation that these people are going to take lightly, obviously. And interesting that Yatsenyuk classified the initial shutdown last accident. So what's going on in Ukraine right now? I don't know. I really don't know. Could it be some sort of Stuxnet type attack? Could it be something happening from Russia? There's all kinds of things that we could conjecture about here, but I'm going to get away from that. But just letting you know, if you have friends and family in Ukraine around where that nuclear facility is, maybe talking to them about getting some backup plans together, not a bad idea. Let's see here. Prosecutors in the Italian port of Bari on Monday, just yesterday, they opened a criminal investigation into how the car ferry Norman Atlantic caught fire at sea during a crossing from Greece to Italy. This was a big story that went down over just yesterday, and I didn't get an opportunity to speak about it, but there was a large ferry, obviously traveling from Greece to Italy, caught fire en route. At least one person has died, and it was a very, very long battle to put this fire out. It took like 24 hours. It took a long time to rescue all these people off of this boat, and now they are moving forward on a criminal investigation so they can get to the bottom of that. So we'll find out more about that as it develops. Let's see here. Interesting tech story involving one of Angela Merkel's senior staff members. She decided, this is the staff member I'm talking about, decided to take home a document that she wanted to work on her private laptop. And when she brought it back on a USB stick that she had connected to her home computer, the document came back and virus scanners kind of went nuts and revealed that the USB stick was, in fact, infected. So it's an unusual infection, though, because we're actually talking about a piece of spying software called the Regan. We've had some stories about that in the past. It kind of was first warned about at the end of November by Symantec, and it's a backdoor-type Trojan. It's been around for a very, very long time. But it does demonstrate a pretty high degree of technical competence. It's not something that just some kids threw some script together and came out with. So what's alarming about this story is that a personal computer of one of Angela Merkel's staffers was infected. What's more alarming to me is that everybody out here doesn't just assume that their computers are infected anyway. Why would you take a USB from Angela Merkel's office to your home, put it in a computer, and then take it back to work? Seems like that's a pretty substantial breach of security just in and of itself. But somebody apparently did have that Regan virus on her home computer, and she was able to take it back to the office. They were able to eliminate it from all of the other systems, that are connected to that network. So it wasn't really a big deal. But just a heads up out there, USB devices, you get emails all the time. This Regan thing is real. There are backdoor Trojans out there, and you can take them to work with you. You don't want to be that person that goes back to Sony after a long weekend and destroys the universe. I'm telling you, get a good malware detector, and don't just put random stuff into your computer, guys. I want to give a quick warning and a heads up to the people in the UK right now. As of today, there are hundreds and thousands potential bottles of fake vodka being sold in the UK. This has happened a couple of years in the running here. We've had this happen over and over every couple of years, so we're just kind of putting the heads up back out there right now that there are a lot of people out there that sell fake alcohol, and apparently it's a much larger problem in the UK than any place else. They actually raided a factory in Derbyshire over the weekend and recovered 20,000 empty bottles, as well as empty bottles of antifreeze. So last year, apparently, there was a guy who manufactured 165,000 bottles of fake vodka, which was all found unfit for human consumption because it was made with antifreeze and isopropanol. And so that guy was arrested last year. He had been branding the vodka under the name Glen's and sending it to independent shops all across the country. So just a heads up, check out your labels. One of the reasons they were able to catch this guy who was making the Glen's vodka is because the labels had misspellings on them. So, I don't know how prevalent the problem this is, guys, in the UK, but I love all you people out there, and I don't want anybody to drink poison over the holiday. This isn't supposed to be that kind of holiday. So let's just keep each other safe, watch each other's back. If you're in the UK right now, pay attention. There could be some bad vodka going around. Obviously, we don't want anybody to be subjected to that. So also coming out of the UK, the former treasurer, this guy, what a piece of work. He's the treasurer of the Pedophile Information Exchange. That's his name. He's in jail right now, so just rest easy for a second here. He's also the half-brother of the Tory MP, and he is being questioned right now by detectives after being jailed last week. He's right now – his name's Charles Napier, I should have mentioned. He is expected – they are saying essentially they are going to force him to name names. They are saying that he's in jail right now, Charles Napier, for abusing upwards of 23 different boys. He was a former teacher, but he essentially can name establishment figures, including peers, government ministers, civil servants, and police. And the reason he can name them is because he was the treasurer of that pedophile information exchange. Just to put it into context, how wonderful a guy this Napier gentleman is. As I said, he was the treasurer of the PIE, which campaigned on the behalf of pedophiles from 1970s up through the 1980s, and this was the guy that argued that the age of consent should be lowered to 4. How is this guy still alive? I mean, honestly, how is this guy still alive? He must know where all of the bodies are, and I hope they make him squeal like a pig. Here, you know what? I'm anti-torture when it comes to terrorists and things like that, but that right there, that's a guy that needs to be watered as far as I'm concerned. Maybe that makes me. We gotta go to a quick 3-minute break, you guys. I really appreciate you guys being former sheriff Richard Mack. Be on at 11 o'clock. Talking monsters. Really good stuff, guys. Thank you for being here. Check out redpillreports.com. 3-minute break. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Here at MyPatriotSupply.com, our customers are number one. Built on a self-sustaining business model, we don't owe our existence to big banks or big business. Instead, the company was built by you, the customer. The success of My Patriot Supply is a testimony to the loyalty and dedication of each and every one of you, to our old-fashioned values and top-rated customer service. These elements alone have made us the number one choice of patriots everywhere. We believe that being prepared should not be a luxury reserved by people with large disposable incomes, which is why we have the products you need at the prices you can afford. We bring you our Patriot Pantry brand of storable food, which features top-of-the-line flavors and carefully packed to store for 25 years. Plus water purification systems, non-GMO heirloom seeds, survival gear, and much, much more. Visit MyPatriotSupply.com or call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Doctors don't want you to know about iodine because it allows the body to heal itself quickly and permanently. Iodine Now is a complete powder formulation that will load iodine into the body with vitamin C for the best possible absorption. Iodine Now, available by the case and for protection from radiation, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine. including all heavy metals. We believe that this is the main element that humans need more than any other at this time. This formulation is infused with our bioactive aerobic rare earth nutrient powder that has a powerful negative charge that attracts positive toxins. Why not buy one product that does the job of 20 and saves you space, time, and money? Has a storage life of 100 years, all for about $18 a month. Call 888-910-4367 or visit hempusa.org. Call 888-910-4367. Bringing back the universal medicine for mankind. Iodine now, only at hempusa.org.
Squared Radio with Brooks Atkins.
Sunday on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for being here and sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank you guys also for checking out redpillreports.com. The guys behind the scenes do such a great job keeping that website looking beautiful. We get a lot of compliments on it, and I can't thank you guys enough. We're going to jump back into some national news right now. There's obviously a lot more going on in the world. One of the other international stories I wasn't able to get to was pretty much Greece falling apart. They had a couple of elections that they tried to do. And didn't go so well. So they're looking at snap elections right now. It's really affected their economy over there. Is that going to spill over into our economy? Who knows? We'll have to check it out. I'm going to get through some national news, and I'll jump over into the economic stuff here in just a second. I want to mention this silly story coming out of New York right now as the mayor, de Blasio, was booed and heckled as he spoke to the city's newest cops yesterday morning. He was doing a graduation ceremony for the latest class of graduates from the police academy, and audience members were shouting traitor at him as he took the podium in Madison Square Gardens. I do not understand, ladies and gentlemen, what people's beef is with the mayor. Maybe I haven't done enough research into this, and if you guys have some insight, I don't understand specifically what they, the people and the police officers want the mayor to do. I think that, for me, is the crux of the issue. I understand that they're upset with him and that they say that the you know, the slain officer's blood is on their hands. Perhaps he didn't do enough to dispel the protesters. But I don't really I can't make that connection in my mind. I'll mention that to Sheriff Richard Mack when he's on in the next segment. And see if he can maybe explain to me where this anger is coming from. But there are still a lot of people very angry with the mayor of New York right now. And they are heckling him. A lot of those people were wearing badges yesterday. So just interesting stuff. I don't know what to make of it. If you guys have insight, please give me some insight on that. The NSA did a little data dump over the holiday. They actually let loose some documents detailing about 12 years worth of illegal activity, and they did it, of course, over Christmas because they don't want anybody to be paying attention to it. And they actually came out and said the reason that we're going to release all of this information on Christmas is to, quote-unquote, minimize the impact, which means we don't want anybody to read it. And that's according to the American Civil Liberties Union. But there's a great breakdown of all of this information done by Russia Today. You can find it in today's news section under the show segment at redpillreports.com. Essentially, it says everything that we already know, except for the fact that there were now stories coming out where employees were using electronic surveillance tools to snoop on their spouses and things like that, which is Love Int. We talked about that, I believe, with Gary Milievsky maybe a month or so ago. But so we kind of already knew all of this was happening. Collection of Americans' communications, all kinds of widespread abuses. You can go and you can find the breakdown of that document. I'd watch the Russia Today video because the lady's very pretty and she does a good job breaking it down. Those are things I look for in news, ladies and gentlemen. The U.S. is planning to regulate drone usage in 2015. Obviously, they've been talking about it back and forth with the FAA and some of the corporations that want to use drones in the United States. They haven't really been able to come to any kind of real concrete, they haven't really made a real concrete decision on this one, but they are now saying that they will have documentation outlining drone usage in the United States as early as January. So we should, in the next month or so, understand exactly what the FAA's plan is for regulating drone use in the United States. So we'll keep you up to date on that. Here is a very alarming poll. Oh, my gosh. Every day I have to read something that just makes me say, I don't want to be here anymore, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm telling you, that Supreme Court decision yesterday, and I'll mention this to Richard Mack in the next segment, about police essentially now only, you know, they can get away with whatever they want as long as there's a reasonable belief that they are within the level of the law, within the lines of the law. That's not, you know, I think about these stories, ladies and gentlemen, and I read them, and I think, let's looking at that Supreme Court example. If I was sitting someplace reading a newspaper, and I read that story, the very first thought that would be in my mind would be, man, I am so glad I don't live there. And I cannot tell you, like on a day-to-day basis, how many stories like that come up, and they're not from other places. They're from here. And I have to think, oh, I'm glad I don't live. Oh, son of a, I still live here. Okay, and here's another one of those. The CNN poll, it was just released yesterday, talking about who the front runner is for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. Do you want to take a wild stab at who the poll winner was? It's Jeb Bush, ladies and gentlemen. Jeb Bush winning as clear front runner for the 2016 Republican presidential nomination. You know who followed him in that list? Not even closely, but the strongest second place contestant in this prize game here, Chris Christie. So we're looking at Bush and Clinton again going head to head with maybe somebody like Cruz. Let's not forget who his wife is, Heidi Cruz. What do they talk about around the dinner table, I wonder? This is going to be the worst election in the history of elections. And I don't say that lightly. This literally, I would rather have Genghis Khan running the country than flipping Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton. And that's, we know right now, those are the choices that are going to be on the table. It's just disgusting to me. I want to stop the world because I would like to get off. Please, I'd like to get off. Thank you. The interview movie, obviously we talked about that. It's been here and there and up and down and in and out and whatever you want to say about it. But they did earn more than $15 million just through online sales in the first 4 days of its release. So this doesn't include Sunday. This is just up through Saturday. It's interesting because they actually only made $2.8 million in the theaters because they only kept it less than 350 independently owned theaters. So they went to YouTube, they went to Google Play, and they went, you know, I think to Netflix also. And they were able to garnish $15 million, which is important because they only spent $44 million to make the film. And obviously Sunday, you could probably add another $5 million to this. And on a side note, the film has been downloaded illegally more than 2 million times right now. So if the agenda was to get this film hyped up so people would watch it, man, mission accomplished, Sony. You guys did an awesome job. Also, well, I'm not going to jump. I don't want to jump to tech news yet, but there's more tech news coming out about this Sony hack. More and more people saying now definitely the result of an inside job, which makes you wonder if part of that was initiated so that we could start flexing our cybersecurity muscle against North Korea. Obviously, North Korea has their internet knocked off for 4 days. They haven't been able to do 3G calling, which does really affect a lot of people in the country of North Korea. So was that, you know, a whole thing, a staged deal just so we could flex a little cybersecurity muscle? I kind of wonder. I'm starting to think about it now. Colorado, I got some great news for you guys. A lot of people have been knocking Colorado. Obviously, Oklahoma, Nebraska teaming up to sue Colorado because they're the marijuana pouring over the border into Oklahoma and Nebraska, messing up law enforcement there. Big lawsuit going on. But again, Colorado, you guys did something great. You guys legalized marijuana for adults. I'm fully in support of that. I bet you $1 million to a hole in a donut that if I bring Richard Mack on the show next hour, he's going to be in support of that too. And I haven't even spoken to him about that, so that's just conjecture. But I'll bet you $1 million to a hole in a donut. Anyway, Colorado, guys did awesome, made more than $34 million in marijuana sales just in August. Okay, that means the state raised $3.4 million for building and maintaining schools in the state. At that rate, that means at the end of the year, some $30 million will be brought in just to schools and maintenance. That's huge. Also, crime has gone down. And I've got friends who live in Colorado. Maybe they can corroborate this or not. But they say overall crime has gone down by 15%. Murder's been cut in half. All right. Government planning right now to allocate some of the state tax money from pot to improve infrastructure and employing more people, even now as the unemployment rate in Colorado continues to drop, ladies and gentlemen. So my question, again, always is not which state's going to be next. It's which state is going to be the last state to legalize, because how could you possibly be in Missouri and look over at Colorado and say, wow, their schools are funded and their violent crime is down and their unemployment rate is way down and the sky hasn't fallen and they're making all this money for schools. Maybe we should look into that. You know what I mean? I cannot imagine which state is going to be the last man standing, so to speak, because that state would be just unbelievable to me. I can't even imagine that people aren't just clamoring over themselves to get in on the action of this and hemp cultivation. We could change the planet with just those two things, ladies and gentlemen. We could fix the entire economy overnight. Anyway, protesters tried to shut down a mall in St. Louis on Sunday night. This was the Galleria. Obviously, if you're like me and from St. Louis, recognize that's a major, major, major mall there. There were a whole bunch of people showed up for a protest. They did a staged die-in. And then when the private security guards of the mall asked people to leave, they refused, so the police came. There were initially reports of shots being fired, but that turns out to be false, and there was only one person arrested. But still, you know, people up in arms about police brutality, and people are tired of dealing with it. So again, we're going to talk to Richard Mack in the next hour about all this, and I think it'll be pretty interesting. Let's see here. Anything else going on? I'm going to skip the rest of the national news, and we're going to jump over into some economic stuff. Let's look at the markets here. Down about 50 points. Early trading down below that $18,000 mark for the first time in a week or so. Gold bumping up big time today. We've had a bump of $23 today, but that only lands us back to that $1,205 mark. So gold was pretty off of its highs. Pardon me, yesterday. And so we're seeing a reflection or a reverse in that. So gold, as I mentioned, $1,205 for an ounce of gold, and silver following suit with a 4% rise today, $16.40 big pennies. Get you an ounce of silver. Oil also still continuing to slide a little bit. We're below $55 right now at $54.12. We were as low as 52 and change overnight. So we're seeing a little bit of a rebound now, up about a quarter of a percent in that particular situation. The Swiss depositors are apparently very, very confused right now about this negative interest rate policy. Maybe not. Now, this negative interest rate policy, we mentioned this, I want to say last week this was announced by the Swiss National Bank. They were saying they're going to impose negative deposit rates on their slight deposits or sight deposits. Now, they are basically deposits that commercial banks can hold with the central bank. But when they announced this, they said, you know, we're going to instill, as of the 22nd of January, we're going to instill this negative interest rate. And if you hold money over, I think, a million Swiss francs, it was lower than that. I'm sorry, it was like 10,000 Swiss francs in one of these sight funds, we're going to charge you money. And so we would think you'd see a flight away from the sight accounts. But that's not what's happened. They have increased 3.4% just this week, which is the most in over 18 months. So does that mean we need more negativer interest rates? Apparently, if you're in Switzerland right now, is going to be the answer, is what Zero Hedge is saying right now. Very interesting stuff. And the Greece, as we mentioned, you know, had some political turmoil yesterday, and their stock market actually plunged 11% yesterday. They were able to regain and ended up only being down about 4% at the end of the day yesterday, but obviously the markets are open again today. and what fueled all that, obviously, as we mentioned earlier, the new snap elections, they're going to decide whether the country receives more financial assistance from the Troika of creditors, which is the European Commission, the European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, and continue its policy of austerity, or the policy of spending cuts and international borrowing. Obviously already boosted Greece's external debt to 177% of GDP. So the argument obviously still coming down all over Europe between austerity measures and major bailouts from large international organizations, or anti-austerity measures and trying to get the people back on track. And so that's what's going on right now. The former European Commissioner Dimas, who is apparently the government's preferred candidate, he did not make the cut yesterday. He only got 168 out of 300 votes, and he needed 180 to be confirmed. So failure to elect a new president means an early general election has now been called. This early general election obviously translating into turmoil in the stock market. But they're essentially fighting between, again, major bailouts, which come with added austerity measures against the people, or the removal of austerity measures and trying to get the Greece economy back online to actually be working for the people there. So, you know, lots happening over there in Greece right now in terms of economics and in politics. So we'll have to keep an eye on that. Minimum wage getting ready to rise in 20 different states and the District of Columbia beginning Thursday as laws and automatic adjustments are made with the start of the new year. In 9 states, the hike will be automatic, an adjustment that's made to keep the minimum wage in line with rising inflation. But in 11 states and in Washington, D.C., the rise is a result of legislative action and or voter-approved referendum. 2 more states, Delaware and Minnesota, will get legislatively driven hikes later in the year, while New York will raise its wage on December 31st. 29 states right now have minimum wages above the minimum wage of $7.25. And again, 20 states looking to raise their minimum wage on the first of the year. Let's see, here's a kind of a startling insight about colleges right now, and this is coming from the billionaire owner of the Dallas Mavericks, and he's saying that American colleges are in serious, serious trouble because of the $1 trillion in student loan, this big student loan bubble. He goes on to say that college tuitions have exploded because of easy money guaranteed by Sallie Mae, and so if any student can borrow more and more money and it's guaranteed by the federal government, which is where it goes right now, you know, why wouldn't colleges take all of it, which is obviously what they've been doing for like the last decade. The problem is that the bubble has led to over $1 trillion in student loan debt, which is having a pretty significant impact on the economy. And it's really actually holding the economy's ability to grow back. It's holding back housing. It's holding back apartment building. It's holding back car sales. It's holding back clothing sales. Really, anything that's not an absolute necessity, graduates can't even afford today. So that's really a really good insight in terms of what it's actually doing to the economy. With all that money going into your student loan debts, you're not able to go out and buy a new car. You're not able to go out and buy a house. You're not able to go out and even buy new clothing or have a Christmas like you want to have. So obviously it's creating a drag on the economy. But he goes on to say that he believes that this bubble is actually going to burst because it's inevitable that at some point there'll be a cap put on student loan guarantees. And when that happens, we're going to see a repeat of what we saw in the housing market with easy credit for buying and flipping a house completely disappearing, right? We saw the collapse of the price of housing. We're going to see the same collapse in the price of student tuition, and that is going to lead to colleges going out of business. And that is a very interesting insight. And this guy, obviously, owner of the Dallas Mavericks, he's done a little bit in business, Mark Cuban. So he's pretty smart dude, and I think he might be right. I think that colleges have really bitten off quite a bit more than they can chew in this particular situation, and we'll probably see the result of that coming down in the future. Let's see here, moving into some tech news. What is scary right now? Let's see, Coinbase is in the news. Obviously, Coinbase is one of those platforms for people out there who use Bitcoin often. Okay, so this is a heads up about Coinbase, giving us a pretty good demonstration about why consumer regulation is such a problem. The company seems to be tracking what their customers are buying with the Bitcoins and then closing accounts involved with transactions that the company, quote unquote, objects to. Now, it's probably no secret that Bitcoin and Bitcoin users are not really fans of regulation, but what's really genuinely misunderstood is that it's not an aversion to regulating in general. You know, people understand that in the real world, big financial powers aren't really regulated in a practical sense, but they should be. And then we also can reflect on the fact that consumers are regulated, really heavily regulated. But now Coinbase has been banning user accounts that send Bitcoins to gambling sites, even though online gambling is not illegal. And one Reddit user, again, Reddit being that site that I like to go to for news aggregation and for commentary about news, a gentleman in Reddit said that Coinbase banned his account for allegedly purchasing cannabis products with coins purchased from the service. Another user accounts was shut down because he was accused of selling coins on local Bitcoins after purchasing them on Coinbase. Now, buying coins on Coinbase and then selling them locally kind of ruffles some feathers in terms of, money laundering, okay? But at the end of the day, Coinbase is not responsible for what their users do with the coins after the fact. And so the fact that they're coming in and are so concerned with staying in compliance with federal anti-money laundering laws, I think that they're really overstepping their bounds here, especially when you consider the fact that you're buying property. It's not a currency in the United States. It's considered property. And what you do with your property after you own it should not be the business of the person that you bought the property from. That's just kind of common sense, in my opinion. But anyway, if you're a Coinbase user out there, be aware that they are starting to track or have been tracking the purchases that you make and then what you use those purchases for going forward. So just, you know, be aware of that. That's important stuff. I want to talk quickly. I'm going to try and play this video for a second here in about 3 minutes, and we'll see if that works. I hope it does because I really want you guys to hear this. But so I'm going to jump over into some health news. Real quick, I'll give you a couple of other science headlines here right now. Monsanto was successful in patenting a natural tomato. They actually took a tomato out of a field with no genetic, bio tomfoolery, and they were able to patent it. However, that patent has now been removed because the European Patent Office, with help from No Patents on Seeds, realized that the Monsanto was trying to pull the wool over their eye and essentially patent something that came from nature, and you can't really do that. So that's good news coming out of the Monsanto issue. Let's see. I'm going to go ahead and move on to some health news right now because there was a pretty large health story. A Glasgow health worker now has been diagnosed with Ebola. Now, this Glasgow healthcare worker arrived from Sierra Leone. This was Sunday night. This just happened. The woman, thought to be a nurse, returned to Scotland via Casablanca and went through London's Heathrow, arriving at Glasgow Airport on a British Airways flight at about 11:30 p.m. on Sunday. The patient, understood to have been volunteering for the Save the Children, was administered to the hospital early this morning. Now we're talking about Monday morning, after feeling unwell, and was placed into isolation at 7:50 a.m. She's currently stable. But here's the situation. She flew through Casablanca. She flew through London's Heathrow. So there are potentially a lot of people being exposed to this disease right now. And this is a pretty big deal because the healthcare workers there saying no big deal. She's not been a risk of exposing to anybody. But we're talking, she was admitted to the hospital 12 hours after she got off that flight, ladies and gentlemen. So again, I'm not trying to cause alarm or say for sure that Ebola is an issue. But Ebola is now in Scotland and that's an official thing and it went through, Heathrow. So just as a heads up, anybody who was on that Heathrow to Glasgow flight on Sunday night, you are asked to call 0800-85-85-31. There are people in lab coats who would very much like to speak with you, I imagine, and I think you'd probably like to speak with them also. Lots more health news and stuff like that going on, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to try and play a little video. Well, it's not going to be a video for you guys. It'll be audio for you guys, but I'm going to play this for you guys because I think this is a pretty important message, and then we're going to go to a quick break, and then when we come back, we will have former Sheriff Richard Mack on the show. I'm very much looking forward to discussing some things with him. So listen to this message from Anonymous to Humanity, guys. I think this is pretty good.
I'm sorry, but I don't want to be an emperor. That's not my business. I don't want to rule or conquer anyone. I should like to help everyone if possible. Jew, Gentile, black man, white. We all want to help one another. Human beings are like that. We want to live by each other's happiness, not by each other's misery. We don't want to hate and despise one another. In this world, there's room for everyone, and the good earth is rich and can provide for everyone. The way of life can be free and beautiful, but we have lost the way. Greed has poisoned men's souls, has barricaded the world with hate, has goose-stepped us into misery and bloodshed. We have developed speed, but we have shut ourselves in. Machinery that gives abundance has left us in want. Our knowledge has made us cynical, our cleverness hard and unkind. We think too much and feel too little. More than machinery, we need humanity. More than cleverness, we need kindness and gentleness. Without these qualities, life will be violent, and all will be lost. The aeroplane and the radio have brought us closer together. The very nature of these inventions cries out for the goodness in men, cries out for universal brotherhood, for the unity of us all. Even now, my voice is reaching millions throughout the world, millions of despairing men, women, and little children, victims of a system that makes men torture and imprison innocent people. To those who can hear me, I say, do not despair. The misery that is now upon us is but the passing of greed, the bitterness of men who fear the way of human progress. The hate of men will pass, and dictators die, and the power they took from the people will return to the people. And so long as men die, liberty will never perish. Soldiers, don't give yourselves to brutes. Men who despise you, enslave you, who regiment your lives, tell you what to do, what to think, and what to feel, who drill you, diet you, treat you like cattle, use you as cannon fodder. Don't give yourselves to these unnatural men, machine men with machine minds and machine hearts. You are not machines. You are not cattle. You are men. You have the love of humanity in your hearts. You don't hate. Only the unloved hate, the unloved and the unnatural. Soldiers, don't fight for slavery, fight for liberty. In the 17th chapter of St. Luke it is written, the kingdom of God is within man, not one man nor a group of men, but in all men, in you. You, the people, have the power to create machines, the power to create happiness. You, the people, have the power to make this life free and beautiful, to make this life a wonderful adventure. Then in the name of democracy, let us use that power. Let us all unite. Let us fight for a new world. Future and old age of security. By the promise of these things, brutes have presence of power, but they lie. They do not fulfill that promise. They never will. Dictators free themselves, but they enslave the people. Now let us fight to fulfill that promise. Let us fight to free the world, to do away with national barriers, to do away with greed, with hate and intolerance. Let us fight for a world of reason, a world of science and progress.
Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know about you guys, but I find that to be about the most inspiring message that I've heard in a really long time. And I want you guys to check yourselves right now. Figure out if you're crying, because if you're not, you might be dead, ladies and gentlemen. If that doesn't move you, I don't know what will. It's time for us all to make a choice, to unite one another. Keep it right here, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a 3-minute break. Former Sheriff Richard Mack will be with us in a moment.
At Truth Frequency Radio, we bring you the very best personalities in the independent media without the corporate influence and with limited commercial interruption. Over the past year, Truth Frequency Radio has become one of the fastest growing media outlets in the world, and we owe it all to you. That's why, with every donation of $30 or more, we'll send you your very own Survive Drive as a way of saying thanks for your continued support. The Survive Drive is jam-packed with nearly 600 ebooks to help you survive everything from everyday life to major disasters. Donate today and we'll continue to wage war against the powers that shouldn't be. Again, thanks for your support and for making Truth Frequency Radio your choice for news without the hate, hype, and fear.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your co-workers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, Deej.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him. Right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
Sure, I'm glad I tried that new Iodine Now microplant powder formulation.
You liked it, huh? I told you it would change your life.
Yeah, I feel fantastic, and I have so much more energy.
Hi, I have your Iodine Now delivery.
Oh, yes, my second order arrived. Thank you so much.
Hey, buddy, why don't you ask this lady out for a date?
Good idea. Now that I'm taking Iodine Now, I have the energy to enjoy my life again.
It looks like you're getting back your old charm, buddy.
I'd love to go out to dinner with you. And can I try some of the iodine now?
Of course you can. You just delivered me a 1-year supply.
Your future looks really great.
I finally agree with you.
Iodine Now, part of the Microplant Powder family. Microplant Powder is available in 15 different formulations. Call 888-910-4367 or visit the website to find the one that's right for you. And listen to our new audio descriptions for every product only at MFUSA.org.
This is Truth Frequency Radio.
No hate, no hype, no fear. Real people, real radio.
Back to the broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I hope you guys enjoyed that message to humanity that we just played. I tell you what, that thing moves me to my core. I must have watched that video about 40 times yesterday, and I did include that video on the news segment for today. So if you go to redpillreports.com, you'll be able to find that there. Moving on with the show today, we're moving into the second segment of the show. Obviously, this is the guest segment of the show, and I am absolutely humbled and honored to be bringing ex-sheriff Richard Mack onto the program. He is the head of the Constitutional Sheriffs and Peace Officers Association. Obviously, an organization that every single person, if you're not aware of, you guys need to get aware of this. CSPOA.org is the website for that. This is getting us back to a constitutional framework for our law enforcement. And with everything that's going on in law enforcement right now across the country, I don't think that there's a more pertinent or relevant conversation that we could possibly be having, which is why I wanted to bring Richard Mack onto the program. So for those of you guys who don't know, he is an author, he is a speaker, he's also a former sheriff. He has been serving in a wide variety of roles over the course of his nearly 20-year career in law enforcement. He actually began in Provo, Utah. I'll let him fill in some of the backlog on his story. But to put it simply, ladies and gentlemen, he has held just about every position in law enforcement that you could possibly hold. He's been a patrol officer, an undercover narcotics officer, a hostage negotiator, a youth officer, school resource officer, communications supervisor, a corporal, a front desk sergeant, a detective, a sheriff, search and rescue supervisor, a jail administrator, and a DARE instructor. I don't know if there even exists another type of law enforcement officer out there. I suppose you'd have to go work in customs or something like that to really round out your resume there. Also a graduate of Brigham Young University. But this gentleman, Richard Mack, ladies and gentlemen, has done more to sculpt our framework and our understanding about law enforcement in this country than I believe anybody has in the last decade. So as I said earlier, it's my esteemed pleasure to be welcoming Richard Mack onto the program. Richard, thank you for joining us on Red Pill Reports today.
Well, thanks so much for having me, and I really appreciate that introduction, and happy new year to all of us. May 2015 be the year that we return to our Constitution.
Boy, I'll tell you what, man, you could not have said a more profound thing right now, because I really feel like 2015 seems to me to be the year where everything is going to come to a head. We can kind of see so many different things happening around the world, but they all seem to be interconnected, and they all seem to be connected with what's going on in our country right now. Obviously, the big stuff in law enforcement in the news right now are the incidents that happened in Ferguson, the incidents that happened in New York City. There's a lot of ancillary things that have happened also that a lot of people aren't speaking about. But I want to talk to you today about that division, because to me, it seems pretty clear that there is a division that is between municipal law enforcement, and by that I mean, you know, the corporate hired law enforcement officials, and the civilians, the people here who believe that the role of law enforcement is to protect us from oppression and things like that. Now, I've done a lot of research recently trying to figure out where the root of law enforcement actually comes from, the division between sheriffs and law enforcement, because obviously there's a little bit of animosity that exists there. But I want to put it into a historical perspective for the people, Richard, and talk a little bit about, you know, where does this idea of law enforcement come from in our country? What is the difference between a sheriff and regular law enforcement? And are we holding them to standards that historically they have never been held to before? You know, well, how did we get into this mess? Where are we at? I'd love to get all of your opinions about all of these things, if you don't mind, sir. So wherever you'd like to jump in, you
well,
feel
that
free.
Well, that is a huge topic.
I know.
We could spend hours on everything you just alluded to. But law enforcement started when communities started to form here in the United States, before we were the United States, I should say, just the American continent. The first sheriff in recorded history appears to be in Delaware about 1655. And this came from old Anglo-Saxon law. The office of sheriff goes back over 1,000 years. And the name of the sheriff actually comes from the reeve of the shire. The political divisions in old England, when they started to expand, they would create counties, and they were actually shires. And then they would require somebody to kind of oversee the county, and he was the reeve. And so that, over the years, became the shire reeve, and sheriff evolved, and that's what it is. And the sheriff, of course, was the main guy. I mean, he ran the county. He was the head of law enforcement and keeping the peace and protecting the people. And that's basically what he's assigned to do today. However, the evolution of law enforcement has kind of gone to where any city wanted that, any group or city that want a annexation, that's the word I wanted, from county governments over to smaller city governments has started to happen. And then they wanted their own power. And so they started creating their own police departments, which was really unnecessary in the office of the sheriff. But that evolved, and that happened, and then they wanted their own way to collect funds. And so they started establishing enforcement with traffic and other things, obviously. Mm-hmm. And now traffic enforcement, I believe, is one of the biggest abuses in government today.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. You have no idea.
It is.
Oh, I know. I mean, and what's important, and the reason I wanted to bring up the historical concept is that, you know, a lot of the research that I did shows that, you know, the municipal police departments were really kind of brought about by corporate demands, by people wanting to protect their corporate investments, their infrastructure, and things like that. And we do see that then kind of being permeated over into cities and counties once those places became corporations, which is really the name of the game that we have today. But for me, you know, when a law enforcement officer is out there specifically for the task of generating revenue, or they are trying to make you contract with them, which is what a ticket actually is, and they are doing it by saying that the state is the victim of a crime. The state itself is above you in the hierarchy of reality. That doesn't make sense to me, because the state is a creation of the minds of men, and you get all these people who want to say, well, the states need to be sovereign, and you say, okay, well, what does sovereign mean? And they start listing all of these human attributes, these attributes that only can really apply to humans, and we've anthropomorphized them onto the state, and now we've elevated the state to a position above us. Which in the natural hierarchy doesn't make any sense to me, because it's not in keeping with the divine law, which is, you know, where we get to the Constitution aspect of all of this.
Correct. God's law is the most important of all of this, and no man's law can supersede God's law. And the intent of the Constitution was to protect God-given rights.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Aspect. But yeah, you're absolutely correct. Departments have been formed as revenue sources and revenue agents. And that's something I objected to when I was sheriff, and I started sheriff in 1989. So I guess I was way before my time, but I ordered my deputies not to write tickets to people for not wearing seatbelts.
Wow.
Okay. I think that's a huge abuse. And I told them, we're not going to do it. I said, yeah, you can stop people and tell them it still remains their choice. And if you see children that are in child restraint seats, then tell them where they can go get the seats. And if they can't afford them, there's places where they can even get free ones. Mm-hmm. And not plunder their substance. And that's all modern-day law enforcement has turned into, is the king's soldiers who go out into the villages and extract, quote, taxes from the people.
Right.
It's plunder. And that's exactly what police officers are doing today. It's legalized plunder.
It's like piracy. And, I call them road pirates.
Yeah, it is. And if you go look at the city that runs people through there with their traffic tickets, you know, there's about 100 people every day. And I live in Gilbert, Arizona. And I've been through there, and I went to check it out, and because my wife, you know, go in there, and there's 100 people in there, and in Arizona, allowed to have a jury trial for a traffic citation, and the state made laws to where it became a civil, in other words, it's just a civil matter. You can't go to jail, so you can't have a jury. Well, the Constitution says in any matter over $20, a right of a jury shall be protected.
Yes.
And shall be guaranteed. And violate the supreme law of the land because it gets in the way. And the collections are not as profitable if you allow people the time and money and expense to get a jury infraction against the government. So they try to make it look like it's not issue, it's a civil issue. And so, of course, the requirements for evidence are different.
Ah, okay.
Preponderance. And so, yeah. So if a cop goes into court, the same all across the country. If a cop goes into court and says that person was in the car and they were speeding, do to prove that they were speeding? Well, I saw the radar gun, and the radar gun was working fine, and they did it. You have to show the radar gun speed to the victim, to the driver, to the motorist.
Right.
And let's play this scenario out. But let's play this scenario out. Let's say you got a ticket and you go to court, and you're before some officer, and a real judge. He's not even elected justice of the peace.
Nothing. Right.
And you go in there and you say, hey, Your Honor, I put in a computer. It can print out any time, any place, how fast I was going, the time that the officer pulled me over. He checked my computer printout, and I was going 33 miles an hour, and he said I was going 4. Mm-hmm. And so he says, so the judge or the hearing officer, who's not a judge, says, well, hurry and we'll get this thing dismissed. And then you say, why do I have to, that the officer doesn't have to, that he's not required to present?
Right.
So some sort of, even though they try to make it not, there still has to be some sort of on the side of the government, on the side of the police, to present some sort of physical evidence. And you just trusting the officer's word,
right?
And so and that's, to me, that's a huge created in this country, that the officer gets to just does and doesn't. So if I go in there and I say the officer's wrong, we have no evidence whatsoever to back up what he's saying. The officer made a mistake. Should we believe the officer any more than the citizen? And that's another huge problem. And again, the judges are that the collections of this plundered money happen and right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all the intent is. Does a traffic citation have anything to do with public safety and a real threat to any other citizen? And so these officers just keep it going. They just keep it going. And that's the problem I have with law enforcement today.
Mm-hmm.
Stop following orders. look at true protection, look at your oath of office, study, memorize the principles within the Bill of Rights, and make sure that you never violate those, no matter what the legislature's supposedly a law of.
Yes.
And no matter what your sergeant or your lieutenant or your captain or your chief or your sheriff tell you to do. The biggest difference between chiefs of police and police departments and sheriff's offices is that the sheriff is elected and he answers only to the people. He's appointed by another council or the city council or the town manager.
Right.
And so there's a layer of bureaucracy there from answering to the people. But just the opposite, the sheriff, people. He has no other boss, no other supervisor except the people. Mm-hmm. And I'm really disgusted with some states that are trying. In fact, Connecticut got rid of sheriffs about 15 years ago. There is no office. They just want the state police or the police state to do what they're told,
right,
and to go out there and be the little state officers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a big problem going on now in Delaware, Massachusetts, Rhode Island. Pennsylvania is starting to go this way, too, of destroying the office of the power. Ohio is starting to appoint, at least in one county. And this destroys the Republican form of government that we were guaranteed in America. And that's why I have an organization called the County Sheriff Officers Association. I have a book called The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, mm-hmm, a recent book, Are You a David? And this is all about police and sheriffs and public officials will adhere to their oath of office. They swear an oath in God's name to uphold and defend the United States Constitution. I want to know if you're going to keep your oath and what you will do to put from an abusive federal government, from an abusive state government, and from any other abuse. For instance, my book, and I have asked this question over and over, if you really are in charge of protecting the people, stopping injustice, and preventing crime jurisdiction within your county as sheriff or even a chief of police, if you're really in charge of protecting the people, then who's going to do something about the crimes of the IRS in your county and in your jurisdiction?
Great.
Who's going to protect the people from the IRS?
Mm-hmm. Or the EPA that just changed the definition for navigable waters to include puddles on your property. I mean, these are government agencies,
exactly,
that want to come in and mess with your life.
Well,
and
the next question is who's going to protect them from the tyranny of the EPA or FDA, mm-hmm, or DHS or any of the hundreds of bureaucracies,
exactly,
taken over? Our government has been taken over. The Constitution has been taken over. Do your listeners really know that the IRS believes that their policies and the supersede the Bill of Rights? They do.
Wow.
And so does the EPA, and so does the FDA. They don't have, and it's astonishing that our own Congress, who establishes these bureaucracies, they have to follow, we have to follow the Constitution.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, they establish bureaucracy. And that makes very little sense, because if Constitution, yet we can establish all these bureaucracies that don't have to,
mm-hmm,
there's very little meaning in our lives, because we are completely controlled and dominated by the hundreds and hundreds of bureaucracies that exist in America today.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Did you see the Supreme Court decision that came out this week regarding that Fourth Amendment stop that happened, I want to say, in South Carolina? The Supreme Court just ruled this weekend that an officer, yes, can pull you over with, as long as they have a reasonable misunderstanding of the law, that it's fine. They can do pretty much whatever they want.
Yeah, I didn't see the one justice who dissented. Who
Scalia.
Was
it? It was Scalia.
Scalia dissented,
yeah,
and not Thomas? I thought it would have been
no,
Thomas.
Scalia was the only one who said this is obviously not right.
Good grief.
Yeah.
Thomas must be getting old. He's usually the one that will be the one lone on pure freedom and constitutional issues. Mm-hmm. Scalia's made lots of mistakes. Scalia wrote, though, I sued the federal government and won a case at the U.S. Supreme Court. Most beautiful, historically profound 10th Amendment decision in the history of our country. And books, in fact, I have on my website at cspoa.org a little booklet review of the case, and it's called The Victory for State Sovereignty. Mm-hmm. This was the most powerful in the history of our country, and everyone needs to see that case. But the overall, you mentioned state sovereignty earlier. Mm-hmm. Does anybody... The state sovereignty only exists to protect the sovereignty of the individual.
Yes, thank you for saying that in such a clear, concise manner, my friend.
I used to be a detective, as you mentioned, mm-hmm. and so I did my own investigation. Law enforcement. I wasn't a constitutional nut when I started evolving and started studying and looking at these things, and I saw things that I started to wonder about. I didn't know for sure they were wrong.
Right.
Undercover assignment. I wondered why we were doing this to people and what in the world laws for, and the war on drugs and this has been, and are the taxpayers really getting a benefit for all the money they're pouring in? And I started studying that, especially after I was an under warrior. And in law enforcement, that's pretty much what you dedicate 80% of keeping right. people from being stupid. You know, it's our job to protect stupid or addicted, or we're going to control your appetites and your addictions for you. And if we do for it and put you in a box and let you deal with your addictions in there.
Mm-hmm.
But... It all became so stupid, but when I was looking the overall picture, why we have government, why we have police, I ran smack in the face of the oath of office, and I almost quit my job because I said, I'm not keeping my oath. I'm not doing this. I promised in solemn oath, Constitution of the United States. I said, I don't even know the Constitution. So instead of quitting my job, and I studied what the Founding Fathers wrote. I really studied the Bill of Rights. And I found out the Bill of Rights, untouchables. These are the basic God-given blessed with as Americans that government can never touch or violate.
Mm-hmm.
They can't even think about it. And these were the Declaration of Rights through all generations, could never touch. Mm-hmm. And then I looked at the Second Amendment because I heard my own chief of police say that only cops and I started looking at that, and I go, wow, man. Because government was never to be of our constitutional republic. The king, in our form of government, as far as government is concerned, we're in charge.
Right.
We bestow all power. How is can come to us and say, we will take your power away from you or regulate the power that you have not only given you by God, but also, and yet we're going to come in and tell you how that's going to happen, how many and you can have, what kind of guns you can have, and even if you can have. And yet, the Second Amendment is very clear on that. Whether you like guns doesn't matter to me. It has nothing to do with this being the supreme law of the land. And let me make this very clear. Gun control in America is a... Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It's against the law. And... admit or subject myself to a criminal background check before my allows me to exercise my Second Amendment rights. Sorry.
I agree with you, man. I think it's absolutely asinine, and I hate to use a word like that on the radio, but that's what
it's
it is.
Lunacy. It is total asinine lunacy.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I just, man. Well, you know, Richard, I want to get back onto this idea about the division between civilians and law enforcement, because, you know, one of the questions that I've got since we were talking about oppression and about the fact that, you know, when you're writing traffic tickets, you're really actively engaging in oppressing people. That's what you're doing. I mean, you're essentially asking them to trade their labor for fake Federal Reserve notes and then demanding those fake Federal Reserve notes. So you're opening up the tax liability. I mean, there's so many reasons why that act is oppression. But I'm starting to feel like the majority of Americans are starting to really kind of come to that realization that this isn't what they want from law enforcement. And I'm wondering if you are starting to see that as well, and if you think that as people start to become more aware that the role of law enforcement really typically is to oppress people, if we're going to see more incidents and more people getting upset and starting to really fight back. You know what I mean?
So, I think we have been fighting back tremendously, and that's just with technology, because to videotape so many officers doing the wrong thing.
Yes.
In the past, those videotapes were not available, and so officers were kind of getting away with the tyranny and brutality that they were exercising over common, ordinary, law-abiding citizens. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we have the happen in America, and this, you know, 250-pound cop tasing the 72-year-old grandmother.
Oh, God.
Precise. Or 8-month pregnant woman being tased, got out of her car too quickly. Or, you know, if it hadn't been on videotape, the man getting in his vehicle, he says, "Where's your to get in his vehicle to get a license?"
And they shot him.
Yeah, and so he shot him, and over he shot him.
Yeah.
He asked him to get his license, so he got in his vehicle to get a license, and he starts shooting him instead. Well, if that hadn't been on video, that officer would have never been convicted of anything, I don't believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
There's so many of them, and it's astonishing and very startling. And I still hear law enforcement professionals, well, 99.9%. And they don't do this. I could maybe go with about 80%.
Right, maybe me too.
But it's certainly not that close to 100%.
No way. Richard, we've got to take a quick 3-minute break. I've got to, I'm going to disconnect from you and reconnect because your connection has been a little bit fuzzy. So we got to go to a 3-minute break. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll try and get this connection back on track so we got a little bit more clarity from Richard Mack. Keep it right here. 3-minute break, guys. We'll be right back. Richard Mack is our guest today on the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. We'll be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
American gardeners and fellow patriots, make the right choice with your money, time, and your family food supply. Choose 100% pure heirloom seeds in the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Why spend more? The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com is only $37.95 and includes 20 varieties of pure, hardy, easy-to-grow heirloom seeds. Yes, only $37.95. That's 70% less than our competitors. You could buy 3 Survival Seed Vaults for less than one of theirs. The Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. Iodine.com includes detailed planting and seed saving instructions and ships same day. Plus, all orders over $49 ship free. MyPatriotSupply.com is American owned by patriots like you, passionate about freedom and preparedness. Call now, 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness items when you order at MyPatriotSupply.com. Choose the original. Choose the Survival Seed Vault at MyPatriotSupply.com.
You make a great team. It's been that way since the day you met. But your erectile dysfunction? It could be a question of blood flow. Sometimes when a politician has been in D.C. too long, it goes to his head and he just can't seem to get the job done. Used on a daily basis, Winter Egg in Congress will help you every time the moment is right to have your voice heard at the federal level. When using Winter Egg, it's important to note that the borders will be secured, Second Amendment rights protected, Obamacare and Planned Parenthood will be defunded, and common sense will be used in solving the nation's problems. Other signs of erectile dysfunction may include extreme skin discoloration, the inability to punch oneself out of a wet paper bag,
or maintain a spine in the face of liberal opposition,
amore, de gramine verde, smoking,
and golf. If you have a boner lasting longer than 23 years, seek immediate medical attention. Winter Egg. Because Boehner shouldn't count as chickens before they hatch.
It's Boehner.
I'm J.D. Winter Egg, and I approve this message.
Exposing faux capitalism with Jason Earp.
Sundays on Truth Frequency Radio.
Website at cspoa.org. You can also find him, richardmack.com.
Sheriffmack.com.
I apologize. And about your books, sir, where can somebody go and purchase your books if they wanted to?
Right there at cspoa.org. Just get whatever you want. And I highly recommend that you get the little VSS booklets. Mm-hmm. You need to understand and read that case. You'll be astonished by that. And then my most recent, the two books you should really get are The County Sheriff, America's Last Hope, and the most recent one's only been out a few months, Are You a David?
Do you want to talk about that title for just a second? Because I think maybe people don't know what Are You a David means.
Well, yeah, and it's pretty much described on the cover where it shows Goliath behind a current sheriff, Sheriff Pamela Elliott from Texas. Mm-hmm. And it's so astonishing. Beautiful, amazing cover, but the whole message is, are you a David? In other words, are you ready to recognize who Goliath is today, and are you ready to take him on? Do you have the courage to take him on?
Man, that seems like a book that every law enforcement officer in this country needs to read post-haste, in my opinion. Richard, before we went to the break, we were kind of talking about the division between civilians and law enforcement. And I guess the question that I've got right now, and it's just an opinion of, you know, I want to know what your opinion is on this, but do you believe that there is an agenda to further this divide between civilians and law enforcement, either with the media or with, you know, the DOJ, things like that? Do you feel like they're trying right now to continue this divide?
Oh, yeah, no question about it. But I'll also say that law enforcement, the law enforcement community owns some of that. And we have created that divide, our own selves. And for instance, let's look at Ferguson. Mm-hmm. Was it handled properly?
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, the police came in and they stood in front of government buildings. And who is Eric Holder or Barack Obama or anyone else? The governor of Missouri or the local officials in Ferguson, are they going after the looters? These people going out and burning cars and businesses against their own race, by the way, mm-hmm. Are they doing anything about that criminal activity, or is it being accepted? by our own government officials. Mm-hmm. And did Wilson act appropriately and lawfully? And the problem, I was really leaning towards Wilson, mm-hmm. because being in that volatile, horrible situation, and somebody's trying to take your gun, and he's already been beating on you, I can understand somebody getting shot. However, I would have handled the situation much differently than he did. And when he got on national television with George Stephanopoulos and started trying to excuse what he did, showed no remorse to the family, made no apology for having taken a life of another human being. Mm-hmm. And then he actually said that when Stephanopoulos asked him, why did you pursue him at this point? You're in your vehicle. Why did you pursue him at this point? And he said, I was just doing what I was trained to do. When somebody says something like that in law enforcement and that they did not wait for backup, and especially when he had already called for backup, mm-hmm. Then first of all, he's misstating the facts. He's not trained to do that. And he should have been saying absolutely nothing except, I want a moment to reach out to the Brown family and tell them how sorry I am.
Yes.
I hope that they would accept my apology and forgive me for doing this. Yes, I really honestly felt I was doing my job, but that I ended up taking the life of another human, I've never wanted to do that. And I want to apologize to him for what I did. And that's where he missed out big time. And same thing in New York with Eric Garner. And Eric Garner's case, though, brings out so many other points. The police, all they had to do in that situation was issue him a citation.
Right.
They could have just cited him in and said, well, look, just let me see your driver's license. Let me see some identification. And that's all we're going to do here. And then you can handle this how you want.
Yes.
And when they started pouncing on Mr. Garner, the last thing he did before they pounced on him and killed him was he raised his hands up to the air. Mm-hmm. They could have got his wallet and got his information and cited him at that point and said, Mr. Garner, have a good day. We'll see you later.
Yep.
And that's all it should have ever been. But we train our officers to be so officious. And what was the horrible thing going on? It was a tobacco tax.
Exactly.
Issue. Mm-hmm. That's all it was. Mm-hmm. And these tax collectors are our peace officers out there, instead of protecting and defending and preserving the peace, are actually becoming the violators of all of that.
Well, and it all comes down to the personal choice of the officer. I mean, the Ferguson situation to me could not be more clear. You know, if I'm a law enforcement officer and I'm alone in my vehicle, and A, I've made the poor decision to approach two gentlemen in the middle of the street, which as far as the people that I've spoken with in law enforcement is not a typical maneuver. No. And then so I've got my window down.
In a right situation, never.
Never. You never do that. And then this guy, you know, allegedly reaches into your vehicle and punches you a few times and is trying to take your gun. I'll tell you what, Sheriff Mack, that gas pedal down there on the right under my right foot, that's looking real tempting to me right now.
Is going in reverse at full speed.
Yeah. I mean, that's the option on the table. And the option of driving away from the situation, calling for backup, and handling it from a distance, which is what I would want to do, especially given the size of Michael Brown, if you're really that afraid of him, he didn't make that choice. He decided, I'm going to get out of the vehicle, and I'm going to pursue this guy, and I'm going to fire shots at him. Obviously, not, in my opinion, what we should be training these guys to do. And if it does turn out that that's how we're training these people, then there's the answer on the table, is that we need to retrain these guys, you know?
Yeah, well, you'll remember the Rodney King situation in L.A.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, they said the same thing. We were trained to do this.
Ugh.
I'm going to tell you that is also what you said earlier, asinine. Mm-hmm. If you're being trained to hit a guy with a nightstick 55 times, then you need to tell your trainers that you won't do that, and you need to tell your sergeant and your captain and your chief and anybody else that supervises you that you won't do that. And anybody... any human being taking a stick and beating another human being with it should be charged criminally, and they should have been charged criminally. Now, it wouldn't have been a big long prison sentence for any of the police officers in that situation. But they should have been charged criminally, and the jury got that wrong. And but it's even worse when people think that the answer and solution is I'm going to go loot and I'm going to go show people that I can burn stuff down. And the stepfather of Michael Brown, when he said burn the bitch down, talking about the city, mm-hmm. he should have been charged criminally. Mm-hmm. And every single person who's on videotape should be pursued criminally for every criminal act in Ferguson and the St. Louis area and any place else that anybody else committed a crime.
I think that's what it comes down to, though, is that, you know, we had, I don't know if you listen, you probably haven't been listening to the show that much, and I'll forgive you for now. But last week we had Commander Dale Brown on. Commander Dale Brown is the guy who started and runs the Detroit Threat Management Center, which is a private police department. Essentially, they're armed guards. And the entire motif of his organization and the reason that they've been successful for almost two decades now is because they go into the situation with an altruistic nature, and the entire organization is structured around the idea that you can eliminate from the environment the causality of violence in the first place. So they are proactive. They go in and say, here's a bad neighborhood and this is a bad apartment building. We're going to put two officers, we're going to pay two officers to live in that building all the time and to become friends with the people that live there and to know everybody, because then the criminals will say, well, this environment is not conducive to us dealing drugs or being violent or doing any of those things, so we're going to move on. It wasn't about affecting arrests or, you know, reacting to or recording incidents that had happened. It's about changing the environment going in. And so he really made a very clear distinction between what his officers do and what law enforcement does, which is completely to react to a situation, to allow it to happen, and then to go in, record all the results, and that's, you know, essentially their job. But we don't see them taking the steps to try and remove the causality of violence in the environment initially, which is, to me, the angle that we need to be addressing. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. I've said the same thing, and I think that agency you're talking about has really got the right idea. And we as sheriffs and chiefs of police in this country should be learning from that, because I've said this over and over. No one, not Barack Obama, not Eric Holder, not the mayor of Chicago, not the mayor of New York or St. Louis or Ferguson, were not looking at the problems with inner city violence and what causes inner city violence.
Yes.
Nor do we look at black on black crime. Mm-hmm. Oh, we don't want to look at that at all.
Nobody really wants to talk about the environmental. I think you've got both sides of the coin here. You've got the thug cop mentality that we can talk about. We got law enforcement agencies that hire on record low IQ individuals. You've got people coming from military backgrounds that are not altruistic. Some of these guys are on PTSD stuff, and then you put them in a really snazzy military costume and give them military equipment. It's not going to be surprising to me that they act like military people. And on the same other side of the coin, you look at the inner city thug mentality, and I'm only saying that as a generalization, but you talk about the CIA bringing drugs into their communities. You talk about the prevalence of liquor stores and things like that, the lack of education, which was part of the agenda. And you can also talk about the music industry. Talking about gangster rap, we know with beyond a shadow of a doubt that gangster rap was a creation of the music industry and part of the prison industrial complex to foment violence in these inner city, you know, environments. So I'm not going to say that you know, these people are completely removed from accountability, but I do believe that there needs to be a portion of the discussion where we say, look, this environment that we have promoted for 20 years, you put a kid in a poor education with guns and violence all around him and drugs all around him, and then you feed him gangster rap for 20 years, that's what you're going to get. That's what happens. Same thing with why we see killer cops now, because they don't understand what the role is, and they're being, you know, that mentality is being promoted interdepartmentally. I saw a report this week from from the California Highway State Patrol. They put a special thing on their website talking about how they really want veterans to join because veterans fit into their paramilitary program really well. You know, and the fact that they're advertising themselves as a paramilitary program, that's part of the problem. We've got this environment that has created both of these groups, and then we've got an agenda coming from everywhere that's trying to push them against each other. And I think that's where we get into the situation that we're in right now, Richard.
Yeah, and if law enforcement leaders refuse to address those underlying fundamental issues, then this is never going to be solved. And our leaders are actually making it worse, pouring fuel on the fire. And Barack Obama coming out and making the most asinine claim. Well, we're using that word a lot on this show.
I know we are, aren't we?
When you talk about government, that's going to happen.
Yeah.
But when he comes out and says the institutional racism that exists in America is being exemplified today, instead, and so he adds fuel to the fire, and a black president is sitting there trying to tell America that racism is institutional.
Right.
And how does he think he got into office? You know, let's look at how many, do we have to go count how many white votes he got before he would realize that it was not a bunch of racists that elected him. It was just people who believed what he was saying.
Racism plays such a large role in this. And I'll tell you, looking at Ferguson right now, the incident that happened over the weekend in Ferguson, or over last weekend, where the guy, you know, allegedly pulled a gun on an officer outside of the mobile. Okay, so that incident, I'm from St. Louis, Richard, so I've got lots of friends who live there now, and this is what really bothered me about that incident, is that every single one of my friends put the videos on Facebook, and they dismissed it. They just said, okay, well, that guy, he was a thug, and he pulled a weapon on a cop, and good riddance is essentially what they said. And I had to stop and say, you guys realize how racist that is, right? And because here's the answer, is if that kid had pulled out a gun and had gotten it out first and had shot the cop, wow, we would be falling all over ourselves. We would be mourning his death. We would be trying to figure out, why wasn't he wearing his body camera? Where's the dash cam footage? What actually happened at the event? How can we curtail this violence to keep it from happening again? But he didn't win. The black guy got shot, so no harm, no foul, another one off the streets. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing to me that people cannot see that they're being led by the nose, and it's their own internal subconscious racism that is allowing them to do it. So I think racism, again, it is a factor in this conversation.
It is, and you know, we need to address that. There's no question about it. But I will say this. The Wilson in Ferguson and the officers involved in the death of Garner in New York, or the officer who shot the 12-year-old boy carrying a toy gun and all these others, these are the acts of ignorance and stupidity but poor training. But these are not the acts of cops who are racists who are saying, man, I can't wait for the day that I get to kill a black person. That's not the case. And for anybody to pretend that is actually part of the problem. These officers are not hoping to kill a black person. They're not hoping to kill anybody. And have they mishandled it before and afterwards? Oh, absolutely. But you have to go back to a lot of underlying problems that created this. And within the law enforcement community, you have to go to training first and foremost. And officers are trained to do whatever it takes to go home at night. And officer safety tactics are being highly exaggerated in training. Police academies are very militaristic. Yes, sir, no, sir, march, and make sure you do whatever it takes to go home. And we give them all these toys, as you alluded to earlier. We give them and you're right about the lower IQ mentality. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court decision just totally supported that.
Yes.
An officer's ignorant of the Fourth Amendment, and if he's ignorant of the Constitution, and he's such a dumbass that he doesn't know what the Fourth Amendment means, then it's okay for him to violate the rights of the American people.
Now, it's not okay for you to not know what the law, because ignorance of the law is not a shield from it, which we can see. But if you're a law enforcement officer, apparently ignorance of the law is just fine, right?
Especially when it's violating the supreme law of the land.
Right.
I mean, for God's sakes, can the Supreme Court be more asinine?
I don't think so. But again, I don't want to lay that gauntlet down, because who knows what they're going to decide in the coming months, you know?
I know. I mean, you always think, could it get any worse? Could it get any stupider than it already is? And the Supreme Court never ceases to amaze me. And again, I'm going to come back to leadership in law enforcement. Mm-hmm. We can take care of that. We don't need the Supreme Court telling us how to do our jobs or telling us it's okay for us to be stupid. It's not. And the leadership in the law enforcement community should take this over and say, you know what? we're not going to do this no matter what the Supreme Court says.
Yes.
They are not in charge of my agency. And a sheriff should make that announcement. We're not going to do this. We're not going to be sloppy. We're not going to cut corners. We are going to uphold and defend the Fourth Amendment along with the rest of them. We are not going to allow our citizens to be disarmed. We are not going to destroy freedom of religion and freedom of the press has been happening across our country. We're not going to monitor reporters because they don't say what we want or print what we want, as was done to Cheryl Atkinson from CBS. And it's not okay for the government to monitor citizens without probable cause and due process. And we're not going to allow the IRS to do random audits that are completely baseless on fact and probable cause. And these things are going to start turning around because we're going to take back our country one county at a time. And we're going to have sheriffs and peace officers locally who know and understand the Bill of Rights and that we are the guards of the Constitution. We are the guards of America. And we're not going to allow liberty to be destroyed in our jurisdiction.
Do we have enough leaders in the country to stand up and do that, in your opinion?
Well, that's exactly what we do at the CSPOA, and we've had tremendous success. But I will tell you, we need to make this bigger, better, and faster, and we got to do it right now. And I want to echo what you said to your listeners. Go to our website. Become a part of this movement. Anybody can become a member of the CSPOA. We invite you to become a member so that you can get our emails and our information and that you are part of the solution. We have very few solutions left in America, and we have one that is already, we have evidence that it's working. We have actually a sheriff in Indiana that told the FDA to get out of his county because they were attacking an Amish farmer. You see, you can't let these Amish farmers go or you're going to have chaos and crime all over America. And yeah, another asinine deal.
Right.
And so they're going after this Amish farmer because he doesn't pasteurize his milk.
Oh, the criminal.
Oh, I know. I know. But that's his religious belief that you don't do that to this pure product. And so they came in and they checked his stuff, and he passed all their spot inspections, and they still took him before a grand jury in Detroit. Well, how's he going to get there from Indiana? You know, he'd have to go by horse and buggy.
Right.
And so he called the sheriff. The sheriff looked at the situation. And he told the FDA, from now on, you will not come into my county unless you are adhering to the law, due process. If you don't have probable cause and you don't have duly signed warrants, then don't come in my county again. They threatened to arrest this good sheriff, and then he and I prepared a response and sent it back to the FDA, and they left. And the FDA left this Amish farmer alone. And the Amish farmer's name was David Hostetler. I'm not making any of this up. Sheriff Brad Rogers was the sheriff. And we have other sheriffs that have done very courageous stands against the federal government. We've got to do this more. We've got to take this to the 10th power. We've got to do it now. And that's why we need the support and backup of your listeners. And everyone should become a member of the CSPOA at CSPOA.org and get our tools for liberty. The books that are there are all tools for liberty. Get those. If you don't like them, send them back and I will absolutely refund your money.
Wow. I completely agree. I mean, I can't echo that enough. Obviously, CSPOA is one of the leading organizations in the world right now for getting us back on track. And the training that you guys provide to law enforcement, or just the insight, you know, that people will garnish from going to that website is irreplaceable, because that, you know, without quality information, you can't make quality decisions. And if you've been living in this country and you're less than 150 years old, there's probably you probably are hook, line, and sinkered into a lot of traditional things that you don't understand weren't always the case. Income tax, you know, the Social Security birth certificate, all that kind of stuff. So we get into these ruts where we just kind of go with the status quo for so long, the status quo ends up becoming tradition. But we need to all the time reflect on those things, because, you know, if we've missed a key piece of information, we can't move forward correctly. I wanted to know, too, Richard, are you supporting any sheriffs right now in Utah? Because I know in Utah they're looking to kick all of the feds out at the end of this year. Are you working with
them? We named the Utah Sheriff's Association the Association of the Year for the CSPOA. 28 out of 29 sheriffs there. And I will tell you, I've said this lots of times, the best sheriffs in America are in Utah right now. The best constitutional sheriff is Brad Rogers in Indiana. Mm-hmm. But we have others, Sheriff Glenn Palmer in Oregon. And that we've got some tremendous sheriffs in this country. Sheriff David A. Clark Jr. in Milwaukee doing a terrific job in standing for the Second Amendment. But as far as good constitutional sheriffs, the ones who are on the best path, I should say, heading in the right direction are the Utah sheriffs. They're standing against the federal government. They're standing for land rights. They're standing against the wholesale arrogance of federal bureaucrats. And, man, there is hope definitely in Utah.
Oh, I love it. And there's hope in the CSPOA, ladies and gentlemen. Again, please go check out CSPOA.org. Richard, we have got about a minute and a half left. What would you like to leave as parting words of wisdom for the people who are listening today, sir?
Well, I think it's just what you were saying. There is hope. There really is. There is a program that we have implemented that will take back our Constitution, God-given rights, county by county, state by state. And you have to get involved in the process. This will not work if we're only going to be listening to wonderful programs such as yours, if we're only going to be hearers of the word and not be active doers of the word, be actively involved in the process. This government will fail if we, the people, are not anxiously engaged in the process. We have to. You have to get a relationship with your sheriff. Find out. Take him the book, Are You a David? And after he reads it, get a commitment from him to read it. Ask, Are You a David? Does this book mean anything to you, or is Sheriff Mack all that? Ask him, have a conversation with him or her about it, and get involved in the process. For heaven's sakes, folks, freedom and liberty and America are at stake. Get involved.
Wow. Richard, thank you so much for joining us on the Red Pill Reports today. I cannot echo what you just said enough. Getting in touch with your local elected officials, and especially once you put it in their minds that you are aware of what their role should be, I think you'll be surprised how their role starts to shift. You know, the more people that come to them and say, this is what we elected you to do, and this is what we expect you to do, and this is your record of not doing it, you can start to see how their election cycles, you know, that little light bulb will start going off. And we can, as I said, and as I've said on the radio many, many times, it starts in your heart, and then it starts in your family, and then it moves on to your community. And then by affecting your community, we can create the America that we want. We can have all of these interconnected communities that are self-sustaining, and we can get back on track. So again, Richard, thank you so much for joining us on the air today. I cannot thank you enough, sir.
Thanks. Let's do it again sometime. Appreciate
it. Let's do it. Let's do it. Ladies and gentlemen, CSPOA.org. I expect all of you to go there and join up and to order the books. Do exactly what he said. Take them to your local sheriff. Start the conversation. Get into the minds of these people and let them understand that you understand what it is that you're asking for from law enforcement. That's how this change is going to happen. Tomorrow, Aaron Dykes, Melissa Melton will be on the show. It'll be a very interesting conversation. Thank you guys for sticking with us for the day. We'll take care, and we'll see you guys tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
When you think of your iPhone, you think of your very identity. It becomes such a part of you that you need it, like a junkie needs crack cocaine. But that junkie always needs more. So for the iPhone 5, we took the last iPhone, our most amazing design yet, and gave it 18% more excellence. It gives you the iPhone 5. With this radical new way of thinking, we took the iPhone 4S and completely retooled and redesigned the entire structure. We were able to make it thinner, longer, lighter, shinier, heavier, thicker, and much wider.
Simply put, this level of invention and quality control has never been matched in human history.